is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington, and here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
That's a great initiative. It speaks to the power of partnership and what the private sector can do, step up to the plate and do that. We call on other parties, other private sector to step up and work with us.
That was Dr. John Nkengasong from South Africa on the private sector's pitch to secure vaccines for Africa's 3 million healthcare workers. Details coming up. Also, Somalia's prime minister wants to raise the number of female representatives in parliament. And a war crime suspect from the Central African Republic has been arrested by the International Criminal Court. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. African officials say they are working to acquire hundreds of millions of vaccine doses for the continent, which has seen more than 3.4 million confirmed coronavirus cases. The continent's top health officials also called for a standardized testing plan to allow healthy people to travel. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
The head of the Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says officials are working in a number of ways to obtain more than 300 million vaccine doses over the next year. Africa has seen 3.4 million confirmed cases since the virus arrived last February. Since then, says Dr. John Nkengasong, health facilities across the vast continent have conducted 30 million tests, the bulk of them in 10 countries, which includes South Africa, which is the continent's coronavirus hotspot, plus Ethiopia, Nigeria, Kenya, Zambia, and Uganda. Just under 500 labs across the continent are participating in testing, and he named four countries that have recently begun vaccinations: Morocco, Egypt, the Seychelles, and Guinea. But he noted, much more needs to be done. And he added, the private sector is also pitching in, with telecoms giant MTN this week donating $25 million to the African Union's efforts to secure vaccines for the continent's 3 million healthcare workers.
That's a great initiative. It speaks to the power of partnership and what the private sector can do, step up to the plate and do that. We call on other parties, other private sector, to step up and work with us so that we can continue to fight this pandemic, especially with vaccines.
Vaccines, Nkengasong stressed, are his top priority. In addition to the AU's efforts with American and British pharmaceutical companies, he said the AU has signed confidential disclosures with Russian, Chinese, and Cuban vaccine producers to look into whether those products will work. One question that has also plagued African health officials, especially in South Africa, is whether the existing approved vaccines can work on the very contagious 501V2 variant, which was reported in South Africa. Dr. Salim Abdul Karim, head of South Africa's coronavirus task force, told state television that he is hopeful.
If I was to speculate and guess, I would estimate that it's quite likely that the vaccine will work, given that the other vaccines work against this variant.
Nkengasong also questioned the effectiveness of blanket travel bans from certain countries. Earlier this week, U.S. President Joe Biden announced a ban on travelers from South Africa because of the 501V2 variant. Nkengasong.
We should not be banning people because of the geographic origin, but we should be encouraging people to travel with a negative test. And if we do the we have a common and standardized policy with negative traveling with a negative test, then the issue of being more specific with a variant is off the table, because if you are negative for COVID, you are negative for COVID. I mean, you are not negative for COVID only for certain variants and then positive for that specific variant.
The Cameroonian virologist also broke from COVID-19 talk for a moment to evoke the memory of former Tanzanian President Julius Nyerere, South Africa's first black president Nelson Mandela, and Ethiopian Emperor Haile Selassie, three of the continent's leading lights in calling for African unity and self-sufficiency. He warned, if we do not fight this as a collective of a continent, we will be doomed. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Health facilities are packed to capacity as South Africa suffers from a second wave of COVID-19 that is being driven in part by a new, more infectious variant of the coronavirus. But one of the scientists who identified it late last year says, as terrible as it is, there are several positive aspects to its discovery. Darren Taylor reports.
Professor Tulio D'Oliveira says the Director General of the World Health Organization said it best when recently complimenting the South African team on their identification of the 501Y V2 variant.
You need to know your enemy so you can fight that well. So it's very important to know, even if our enemy is a much more transmissible virus, yeah?
The Brazilian-born genomic scientist is a specialist in analyzing sequences of genes for the KwaZulu-Natal Research Innovation and Sequencing Platform in Durban. He says the discovery of the variant means South Africa is now a leader in genomic surveillance, which could help the world better combat diseases.
This kind of discovery in South Africa was done faster than anywhere else in the world. We could discover this variant within weeks of getting the first sample that we could identify a very unusual cluster. But the way...
Key to unraveling the mystery of the new variant, says D'Oliveira, was cooperation between his team, the South African government, the Africa Centers for Disease Control, and British scientists who'd identified another variant in the UK.
We also follow a strong tip from our clinicians that are seeing a very fast increase of cases in the Eastern Cape. And this collaboration between clinicians and scientists is very important to act quick.
He says it was very difficult for him and his colleagues to meet with President Cyril Ramaphosa to reveal how serious the new variant was.
How do you say to your president that now you have discovered a much faster variant that is going to completely overwhelm your health system within weeks? That was not easy. What was also not easy was not easy to be like I have to defend both in the media, but also attacks from other health ministers in the world about and try to say that we have the worst variant in the world, when our main objective was to be very transparent and do very high-level science. Yeah.
D'Oliveira is referring to British Health Secretary Matt Hancock, who late last year appeared to blame South Africa for a spike in infections in the UK. Hancock, like many around the world, called 501YV2 the South African variant. The co-leader of the country's scientific response to the pandemic, Salim Abdul Karim, says this term suggests blame and is discriminatory.
Please let's not call it the South African variant. Just like, you know, we don't want to call the B117 variant the UK variant. There are variants across the world. And even if they found in one country, we don't even know if that's where they originated from. And they will rapidly spread to many countries.
The epidemiologist says the variant first isolated in the UK has been detected in more than 50 countries.
The 501YV2 variant is already available in more than 10 countries. Just like how we objected when the US president called SARS-CoV-2 the China virus, we should not call this variant by its country. We should call it by its name.
D'Oliveira warns that more COVID-19 variants may emerge that are better able to evade immune responses, potentially causing a third and even a fourth wave of the pandemic in South Africa, even if vaccines are available. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
A war crimes suspect from the Central African Republic has been taken into custody by the International Criminal Court. According to a Reuters report, Mohammed Said Abdulkayin surrendered to the court last Sunday. He was arrested under a warrant issued under a seal in January 2019 related to alleged crimes from 2013. A date for his initial appearance in The Hague has not yet been set. The arrest comes against the backdrop of a state of emergency in the Central African Republic, with fighting between the army, backed by UN, Russian, and Rwandan troops, and rebels seeking to overthrow a December 27th election in which President Faustin Archange Touadéra was declared the winner. A judge for the court said there was reasonable grounds to believe that Said, aged 50, was responsible for crimes including torture, persecutions, enforced disappearances, and other inhumane acts. Fighting raged in Bangui in 2013 between the predominantly Muslim Salaka rebels and a mainly Christian militia called the Anti-Balaka. Said is the first suspect detained from the Salaka side of the conflict. During the first wave of COVID-19, Zimbabwe's government promised an 18 billion Zimbabwe dollars stimulus package to bail out various sectors of the economy. Reporter Kudzai Zanawashi looks at how the stimulus package has performed and concerns about future assistance as the pandemic drags on.
Mike Ndiweni is executive director of the Bulawayo Vendors and Traders Association. He says the recent lockdown announcement found most people unprepared for the economic strain.
No, we are not ready. The lockdown was announced abruptly without notifying people, and people are coming from the festive season. So you can imagine people had already spent what they had. So no one was prepared.
It hasn't helped that the much-promised bailout has been elusive.
So far, no one has received that. And you remember last year, again, the government made the same, a similar promise that they will give people cushioning funds in March. It only came once sometime in October. So we have not seen anything as yet.
Farai Mutambanengwe is the director of Small to Medium Enterprises, or SMEs Association, of Zimbabwe.
Well, we didn't really get much support because what they did was they only did those $300 payments to the most vulnerable. $300 is not much. Everyone becomes vulnerable, basically, in a lockdown. Then there was the $18 billion, which was supposed to be dispersed through the banks. I think for SMEs, it was $500 million. But when we went to the institutions dispersing those funds, the conditions were exactly the same as their normal commercial lending terms. So ultimately, there was no assistance.
The bailout fund carries 20% interest charges, which have kept away many business entities from accessing these relief funds. The thinking is that the interest rate is high. Henry Ruzizo is the president of Confederation of Zimbabwe Industries.
It is high now that we have stability on inflation. You know, then at the time when inflation was quite high, it was okay. But now I think there would need to be a relook on that.
There's no talk of new stimulus packages for the current lockdown. The finance minister says the fund for businesses is still available and only what has been requested is what is dispersed. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashi from Harare.
Zimbabwean journalist Hopewell Chinono has vowed to continue speaking out against corruption after his release on bail following 3 weeks in detention. Chinono is facing charges of peddling falsehoods on social media, charges he denies. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
Journalist Hopo Chinono was released from Chikurubi Maximum Prison on Wednesday after paying about $2,000 in bail, is defiant and bitter about his 19 days in detention on a charge that carries a jail sentence of up to 20 years if convicted.
In the past 6 months, I've spent 8 days behind that filthy prison on trumped-up charges, simply because I'm talking about corruption, simply because I'm making citizens understand the impact of corruption and how it's related to their suffering, to the failure by the government to put drugs in hospitals, to the failure to fix roads, to the failure to deliver water into people's homes. I'm a journalist and I'll continue doing journalism. I haven't broken any laws of this country. It's political persecution, as I've been saying from day one when I was first arrested.
Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, which is representing Chinono and two opposition leaders on the same charge, says peddling falsehoods was removed from the country's statute books by the Constitutional Court in 2014. But the government says the law still exists. In an interview, Nicky Mangwana, Zimbabwe's information secretary, dismissed Chingono's claims of persecution for speaking about corrupt officials.
Everybody talks about corruption. You open any paper, there are people talking about corruption. He knows he's breaking the law, not speaking about corruption. We acknowledge that there's corruption in Zimbabwe. That's why we got sacked. Because we acknowledge that there's corruption. So he's talking nonsense.
ZAC is the Zimbabwe Anti-Corruption Commission. Tabani Moyo leads the Media Institute of Southern Africa in Zimbabwe. He says there's not much to celebrate about the release of Chingono, who has been arrested three times in less than 6 months for his social media posts.
This is a strategy by the government to use different means towards ensuring that there are chilling effects on expressing online. You start to self-censor. That is the same situation they are trying to ensure by arresting high-profile people like the opposition figures, investigative journalists in the form of opposition one. So this is a trial of expression. It's the right to express which is under siege, and no matter which platform that you are analyzing, the right to express in Zimbabwe is literally besieged.
Chingono and opposition leaders Fazai Mahere and Job Scala were arrested early this month for commenting on a video in which citizens accused police officers of fatally assaulting a baby who was on her mother's back at a bus stop. Police later issued a statement saying both the mother and the baby were never assaulted. Chingono is on bail for two other charges. In July, he was arrested for promoting an anti-government protest on social media. Then in November, he was arrested for obstruction of justice as well as demeaning the country's National Prosecution Authority with his posts on social media. He denies any wrongdoing. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
Thousands of undocumented immigrants who cross into Botswana in search of menial jobs are finding no joy as a deadly second wave of COVID-19 leaves locals reluctant to hire them for fear of contracting the virus. From Habrone, Botswana, reporter Mokandisi Dube has the details.
33-year-old Maxwell Dube from Zimbabwe survives through odd jobs in Botswana's capital, Habrone. However, with a fresh wave of COVID-19 claiming more lives, employers are reluctant to engage Dube and other migrants.
The COVID situation has made things really, really, really tough because people don't trust you when you come to their home looking for a job. They think maybe you have COVID. They would not want to give you a job.
Dube says some employers demand proof that workers are COVID-19 negative. It costs 500 bula or $50 to get a test certificate.
Well, some people would ask for COVID-19 certificate. And to get that COVID-19 certificate, you'd have to pay a lot of money. And so it has become really difficult for us as illegal immigrants.
Botswana receives thousands of illegal immigrants from neighboring countries, mostly Zimbabwe. Mawuto Mabena, who heads the Immigrants Organization in Johannesburg, says migrants across the region face a similar predicament.
In South Africa, trying to engage the South African government to ensure that the migrants are vaccinated, we think that is going also to be the hardest part, where people are going to be excluded from employment on the basis that they have not been vaccinated, because people will be saying we are not sure of one status. So the undocumented migrants might be excluded from vaccination, particularly people like those that are standing on the streets in Botswana looking for employment. So if they will not have a vaccination card, they will have problems.
The coronavirus has killed 105 people in Botswana, with the second wave particularly deadly. The country's borders remain open, even as the surge takes the number of cases past 17,000. For VOA, this is Mkondisi Dube in Habrone, Botswana.
Aid groups in Cameroon's capital, Yaounde, are this week going house to house to find neglected autistic children whose parents are keeping them out of school. The UN estimates there are 700,000 autistic people in Cameroon, many of them school-age kids, but says too many families keep them at home because of stigma and lack of resources. Moki Edwin Kindeka reports from Yaoundé.
A group of 15 aid workers and six parents in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé, are visiting houses of families with autistic children. 40-year-old hairdresser Ernestine Diangang, the mother of an 11-year-old autistic boy, joined the group to urge parents to put their autistic children back in school.
Let any woman that is hiding his or her child in the house know that he is destroying that child, because when you bring that child forth to join with another children to learn, you will see that that child will improve. I want to tell you parents that the no more lock children in the house. Come, there is a center here.
Diangang says she once kept her own son at home, wrongly thinking that because he is autistic, he could never succeed at school. An aid group convinced her that her son simply has difficulties interacting with others and is slow to learn, but can still do well in school and have a social life. The Timely Performance Center, a school for disabled children, organized the house-to-house initiative to find neglected autistic kids. Manager of the Yaoundé-based center, Betty Nancy Fonyi, says autistic children are too often kept at home because of stigma and subject to abuse.
Children living with autism spectrum disorder are being locked up at home, isolated, beaten like animals. Some of their parents refuse to even give them food because they don't want them to mess up themselves and embarrass them. Some of them are locked up and their food sent in their rooms. The parents don't bed them. Some of the children come to school with marks all over their body. Some of them with swollen heads.
Yaoundé-based aid groups estimate about 250 autistic children expected in schools this year in the capital were kept at home or withdrawn. They say some parents justify keeping their autistic children at home because of public stigma, insults, and claims their child was born this way because of divine punishment. Autist Hopeland's Emerencia Neba says another problem is money.
Most parents are not able to even provide the basics. We are asking the parents that they should pay particular attention to the children's routine. They need to be loved. You need to show patience. You need to show endurance with them. Give them the confidence. With love, patience and dignity, the children will be able to be independent and do things by themselves.
Petronila Ndizi is the highest ranking government social worker in Cameroon's central region. She says in the past 3 years, authorities have been working to educate people to protect the rights of autistic children. Ndigi says Cameroon is encouraging people to break the silence by reporting parents who decide to lock up their autistic children at home to public officials. She says the government has been educating communities against beliefs that parents who give birth to autistic children are suffering divine punishment for wrongdoing. The aid workers enjoyed some success, convincing the parents of 5 autistic children to send their kids to school. They plan to visit more homes of autistic children in the near future. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international